Hi, this is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries, and I want to welcome you to this week's weekly podcast. It is so good, after being on the road for about 3 weeks now, it is so good to be back home. So please forgive me for a couple days late on getting this podcast out to you. This week, I'd like to move into part four of our series on the active nonviolence of Jesus. We're going to begin with Jesus' words to Pilate in John 18:36, where Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place." And if you're still with me this week, I want to just take a moment before we begin and just congratulate you. We've had so many emails that have come in from this series, and for many, the lights have come on and the whole world is right now changing colors for them. Others are still wrestling, and that's perfectly okay. Others are very upset and have simply walked away from our ministry, and my heart's deeply affected by that, but that's okay too. I can understand where they're coming from. Once again, we as a ministry do not believe that acceptance and agreement are one and the same. We believe they can be separated. We may choose to disagree, but we can accept one another as fellow followers of Jesus. And so I just want to affirm each of you this week. If you're still with me in this series, I just want to say to you personally right now listening, you are my hero. There is so much to this topic, and we're going to move through it each week, piece by piece, part by part. But let's get back to John 18:36 here. Jesus' words, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my followers would fight to prevent my arrest, but now my kingdom is from another place." There's a lot I'd like to say about this passage too, but that time and space does not allow in a podcast like this. But I'm going to share three related passages in addition to this, and some comments about each. And then I'm going to recommend some of the presentations we have on our website to kind of fill in whatever conceptual gaps will occur as we walk through some of this. The first of these three passages is found in Luke 22:25-27. It says, "Jesus said to them, 'The kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who exercise authority over them call themselves benefactors. But you are not to be like that. Instead, the greatest among you should be like the youngest, and the one who rules like the one who serves. For who is greater, the one who's at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who's at the table? But I am among you as the one who serves.'" Here Jesus is contrasting some of the characteristics of the kingdoms of this world with his own kingdom. And the most significant difference in this passage is that Jesus is sharing a kind of power over style of influencing society versus a power under. We're not called as followers of Jesus to lord power over others. We don't steward power well at all. We never have historically. We're not meant to do it. It's not to lord power over others who may believe or live differently than ourselves, but to humbly and lovingly come under, and by serving them, we seek to influence the society around us. Again, this is best summed up by those terms, power over versus power under. And for a more detailed explanation of these two concepts, I want to recommend you go back and either listen to the podcast or reread the e-sites that were posted on our website January 16 and January 23 of this year. You could also listen to the series Religion and Politics in our Jesus Dialogue series that you can find online. That's been updated, and I think you'll find that presentation there. Let's take a look for a moment at what the five main differences are between a kingdom of this world and the kingdom of Jesus. The first is the type of power that they rely on, as we just mentioned, power over versus power under. Second is their societal aims. They seek to control outward behavior versus producing a change from the inside out. There's also the territorial scope. Kingdoms of this world are national in their territory. The kingdom of Jesus is global. It takes in everyone on the planet. Jesus died for everyone, even our political enemies. And the battles that they fight, kingdoms of this world take up arms against other people. The kingdom of Jesus sees that our enemies are not the ones that are flesh and blood right in front of us, but unseen powers. You can find that in Ephesians 6, verse 12. And lastly, how each responds to violence. The kingdoms of this world respond to violence with more violence, kind of a tit for tat, a returning like versus like with like versus returning love, in an effort to bring about a peaceful end or peace by peaceful means, overcoming evil with good. And some will ask, well, is the state wrong then in the methods that they choose? And I want to be clear here. I'm not criticizing the state. I'm not criticizing the kingdoms of this world. They've got to do what they've got to do. And they're not wrong per se, but they are very different. The kingdoms of this world do belong, they in the principles which they operate by, and just by claim, they do belong to the accuser, the enemy. Luke 4, 5 through 6 references this. Luke 11, 22 references this. And John mentions it in 1 John 5, 19. Even though they operate in their methods like the accuser, they are being used by God and serving the role of imposed law in our society. And if you're not familiar with the terms intrinsic or imposed, I want to encourage you to go on our website and listen to the presentation by that very title as well, called Intrinsic or Imposed. So we cannot say necessarily that they're wrong, but they're different. They are being indirectly used by God. This is Paul's point in the passages found in Romans 13. And we'll be explaining more of this in this podcast series. We'll comment more about what Paul's saying here. But Paul is very clear in Romans 12 that those who are following Jesus are not to use the same methods as the state in Romans 13. The church and state may both be used by God, but for very different ends. Those who follow the teachings of Jesus to their logical end know full well that the lines between these two servants, church and state, should never be blurred. The church is called to an entirely different purpose than the calling that the state is called to. We are called to influence society the way our mentor Jesus influenced society. Now let's look at passage number 2. This is Matthew 26, 51 through 54. Remember, Jesus in this beginning passage is saying, if my kingdom were of this world, then my followers would fight to defend me, to take up not necessarily self-defense, but defending those with a sword that we feel are defenseless. This was actually done just a few hours previous from Jesus' words to Pilate. Again, Matthew 26, 51, 54. With that, one of Jesus' companions reached for his sword, drew it out, and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. "Put your sword back in its place," Jesus said to him, "for all who draw the sword will die by the sword. Do you think I cannot call on my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? But how then would the scriptures be fulfilled that say it must happen this way?" Jesus here rebukes this disciple, the disciple who used the sword to strike the high priest's servant's ear. Remember, Peter here was actually, which is the disciple, John tells us that, Peter was actually aiming for the servant's head. But with fast reflexes, the servant leaned sideways to escape Peter's swing, and it glanced off the side of this servant's head, taking off just his ear. Jesus rebukes Peter here and says, "Those who live by the sword will die by the sword." We'll return to this statement before we finish this podcast, but another question that arises from this very passage by many is they say, "Well, but Jesus was supposed to die." Certainly that doesn't apply to us, does it? I mean, Jesus' death was for a specified purpose. So doesn't that specialize the application of these statements here by Jesus? And we'll, once again, we'll return to this before we end today, but I want to bring it up here so you can begin thinking about it. John gives us the identity of this disciple, as I said earlier, and we're going to look at that in John 18, 10 through 11. It says, "Then Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus, and Jesus commanded Peter, 'Put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me. Again, we see the potential for an objection by some that Jesus' words here are not to be taken as a rule of life with no exception, but rather as a specialized application revolving around this cup that Jesus was supposed to drink. Again, we'll come back to this, but I'd like to return to Luke's record of this event and address a typical objection that the peace teachings of Jesus come up against usually, and then wrap all these loose ends up in these passages and then put the puzzle pieces together and see what picture we get. The third passage that we're looking at is Luke 22:35-53. Jesus asked them, "When I sent you without purse, bag, or sandals, did you lack anything?" "Nothing," they answered. And he said to them, "But now if you have a purse, take it, also a bag. And if you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and buy one." It's at this point that many who have been tracking with me in this series, they attempt what others have called a desperate exegesis. And they say, see, Jesus here is telling them, go buy swords, see? And yes, it's undeniable that Jesus was here admonishing his disciples to go buy swords. But we must quickly ask the question, why? Why would Jesus be asking them to buy swords? Is it because Jesus now wants them to use these swords to defend him? Or does he want them to use these swords to defend themselves? We don't have to read too far in this passage to get a clear answer to these questions. It's in the very next sentence. It is written, "And he was numbered with the transgressors. And I tell you that this must be fulfilled in me. Yes, what is written about me is reaching its fulfillment. The disciples said, 'See, Lord, here are two swords.' 'That is enough,' Jesus replied." The Greek word anomos is the word here translated as transgressor. It's defined as someone who is lawless. Jesus must be perceived by Rome, remember, as more than simply a focal point of religious controversy. For Rome to deem that Jesus is worthy of being tried in a Roman political court rather than simply being tried by a Jewish religious court like the Sanhedrin, Jesus must be perceived here as a political threat to the Pax Romana, the peace of Rome. Jesus must be perceived as a lawless one against the order of Rome, a political enemy, an upstart Messiah. For this, the disciples need to be caught with swords in their possession. The mixture of many people's claim that this could be the Messiah, and remember, the Messiah would take up the role of the King of the Jews and lead the Jewish people to freedom from this oppressive power of Roman rule. To the mixture of people claiming that this Jesus is the Messiah, along with the claim that his disciples were now gathering or stockpiling swords, this would be enough to light the Roman fuse that would lead to the crucifixion. Jesus' counsel to go and buy swords could not possibly be because he wanted his disciples to wield them. For starters, two swords for 12 men wouldn't be enough. And secondly, when Peter mistakenly thinks that this is the reason that they were to buy swords was so they could wield them, and he actually takes it out and wields it, Jesus gives Peter here one of the strongest rebukes in all the Gospels. Let's continue on here in Luke 22. Jesus went out as usual to the Mount of Olives. Now we're going to skip his three times praying here. And he comes back to his disciples, finds them sleeping, wakes them up. While he was still speaking, a crowd came up, and the man who was called Judas, one of the 12, was leading them. He approached Jesus to kiss him, but Jesus asked him, "Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss?" When Jesus' followers saw what was going to happen, they said, "Lord, should we strike with our swords?" And one of them, it says here he doesn't even wait for an answer, one of them struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his right ear. But Jesus answered, "No more of this." He touched the man's ear and healed him. Then Jesus said to the chief priests, the officers of the temple guard, and the elders who had come for him, "Am I leading a rebellion?" Remember, Jesus must be perceived as not just the focal point of a religious controversy, but as rebelling against the political order of Rome itself. He says, "Am I leading a rebellion that you've come with swords and clubs? Every day I was with you in the temple courts, and you did not lay a hand on me. But this is your hour when darkness reigns." Again, in John 18:36, Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place." As we shared last week, the goals of Jesus' kingdom cannot be accomplished by violence. And if this is your first week with us, I want to encourage you to go back and revisit last week's Eastside or last week's podcast for a more detailed explanation of this. Jesus is here describing one of the most significant differences between how his kingdom operates and how the kingdoms of this world operate. The kingdom of Rome sought peace at any price. It was peace by justifiable violence if necessary. Jesus' kingdom was about establishing peace as well, but by very different methods. Methods that reflected a peaceful, non-violent approach to peace. Peace was not simply the goal to be achieved, but the way the goal was to be achieved as well. But what about those two objections which we raised earlier, which are really the same, that the reason Peter was rebuked and told to put his sword away was not because Jesus' followers are to live by the rule of peaceful nonviolence, but rather because this was a specialized application. Jesus saying here he was not to avoid the cross, but rather embrace it. In other words, this was just for put your sword away. I must embrace the cross. And that was something that was unique, not a rule that his followers were to live by. Three texts are really all that's needed, excuse me, to be enough to show how misplaced this objection really is. The cross was not simply a specialized event, first of all, to be experienced by Jesus only. It was to be a way of life that Jesus intended his followers to embrace as well. This is from Luke 9:22-24. And he said, "The Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and he must be killed on the third day and be raised to life." Then he said to them all, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. Whoever wants to save their life will lose it. Whoever loses their life for me will save it." In Mark 10:38, we have the language of the cup used to mirror what we are to experience as well. It says, Jesus said, "Can you drink the cup that I drink, or be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with?" "We can," they answered. Jesus said to them, "You will drink the cup I drink, and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized." And the cross of Jesus, again, it's not simply to be something that we as followers of Jesus preach. It's also to be a way of life that Jesus' followers have also embraced. And lastly, we see that Jesus' words to Peter were not taken by the early church as an isolated, specialized application. Not only would we see Jesus' words in Mark 10 fulfilled in the merciless slaughter of Jesus' followers in the first century, we would see the very words that Jesus shared with Peter used by John to even encourage those who were being slaughtered by the sword. Encourage them not to return violence with violence, but rather to faithfully and patiently endure. This is from Revelation 13:10. "If anyone is to be killed with the sword, with the sword they will be killed." This calls for patient endurance and faithfulness on the part of God's people. Again, we'll discuss this more when we get to Paul's words in Romans 12 and 13. But before we do, remember the kingdom of Jesus is not advanced by persuading Rome to govern by different laws. The kingdom of Jesus is advanced not in how we vote, but in how we bleed. By the testimony of the cross itself, attested to by the witness of the first 300 years of what it meant to be a follower of Jesus, it is the blood of the witnesses that is the seed of the kingdom. And to be clear here, I want to make sure you don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying don't vote. Again, if a kingdom of this world asks your opinion on a matter, by all means, give it to them. I'm simply cautioning us to be very careful. We're not to become confused. We're not to think for a moment that we've accomplished anything that's kingdom by our vote. We may have changed something for Rome, but again, the kingdom of heaven is advanced not in how we vote, but in how we bleed. I'm not saying roll over and do nothing. I am saying let the kingdom not only move you to do something, but also dictate the manner, the method in which that something is done. And once again, I want to recommend the presentation in our new Jesus Dialogue series, Religion and Politics. And the methods of advancing Christ's kingdom are radically different. Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place." this week. Keep living in love, loving like Christ, even loving your enemies, and thereby keep building the kingdom. I love you guys. We'll see you next week.